You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We just heard that live coverage from NPR, the first impeachment inquiry hearing held by the House Judiciary Committee. In previous Intelligence Committee hearings, testimony focused on details of alleged attempts to get Ukrainian leaders to announce an investigation of the Bidens and the 2016 U.S. elections. Today's hearings turn the focus, for the most part, to the question of whether the president's behavior amounts to an impeachable offense. The witnesses were four legal scholars, three called by Democrats, one by Republicans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What stuck out to you about today's hearings? Do the president's actions strike you as the type of behavior the framers of the Constitution had in mind when they designed this impeachment process? Do you have questions for our guest or concerns about how this all works? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Paul Nolet joins us now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Paul, good to have you back on the show.
Great to be here.
Well, a lot happened today. What's your initial reaction? What really stood out to you from this long course of back and forth?
Yeah, I think the big picture thing, I think, is that nothing really changed in terms of how the parties are approaching this. I think Democrats have shown that, you know, they're going forward with impeachment. And I think we saw that in the Democratic comments today. And on the Republican side, they're continuing to criticize the process that the Democrats are going through, as well as the substantive part, you know, the claim that what Trump did is impeachable conduct. So I think even after this lengthy hearing for several hours today, nothing really changed in terms of how Democrats and Republicans are approaching this issue.
And what do you make of this approach today? Now, the Intelligence Committee, we had the witnesses who were able to make themselves available. We'll get into who didn't testify in just a bit. Today was, hey, we've got some law professors and we're going to argue the meaning of the impeachment portions of the Constitution. What do you think of that approach?
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, Nancy Pelosi really started with, you know, Adam Schiff on the Intelligence Committee, which I think was a wise choice because they wanted to set the factual foundation. So to have people testify, talk about, you know, President Trump's conduct, others close to him, and try to set the factual foundation for impeachment. This hearing today, after, you know, that 300-plus page report or so from the Intelligence Committee that focuses on the facts, wanted to establish the legal framework for impeachment. Now, the thing is, with the legal side, as we saw today, there's a lot of wiggle room that the Constitution provides in terms of what is impeachable or not. It's not super clear on that matter. So I think there was today probably ultimately, you know, Democrats probably got less from this hearing than what they got from the Intelligence Committee hearing setting the factual foundation.
Well, let's talk about who hasn't testified so far, doesn't appear likely to testify before the House. First, people Democrats might have wanted to have up there, people in the Trump administration, Rick Perry, the Energy Secretary, Mick Mulvaney with the Office of Management and Budget, and others. Rudy Giuliani, of course, serving as the president's personal lawyer. A lot of voices and others key to what we've heard from other witnesses not coming before Congress.
Right. And I think this potentially could be part of the conversation, part of the articles of impeachment, in fact, that the Judiciary Committee could draw forward in terms of, you know, something like contempt of Congress by not having key Trump administration officials testify before Congress or cooperate with Congress. This is going to be one of the Democrats, I think, big arguments, if not an actual article of impeachment in the coming weeks. So, you know, there is a lot here that we still don't quite know. And I think the big partisan dispute is over everything that we do know. So that Adam Schiff and the Intelligence Committee did dig up in the limited number of witnesses that they did talk with. Is that enough to directly implicate Trump in, you know, a quid pro quo or bribery? You know, is it enough to move forward with articles of impeachment? And that is exactly what the partisan divide is right now.
Now, early in all of this, there was talk from some people that, hey, who cares about the quid pro quo? The president out loud saying, making requests of foreign governments to investigate his potential political rival. That right there, apart from bribery, apart from what happens with military aid, some people were saying, Democrats mostly, of course, were saying that there is impeachable without all this.
Yeah, and you know, this came up during the hearing today, in fact, some back and forth about bribery. And bribery is interesting because it's actually mentioned in the Constitution as a crime. But, you know, bribery does have a more specific meaning, even though there was some back and forth about whether the president actually committed it here. But I think what Democrats are really focusing on, and one thing that, you know, if there's any articles of impeachment, it's going to be abuse of power. You know, if there's just one, that's the one that it would be in all likelihood, because there's a lot more wiggle room there about what actually abuse of power is. And so I think, of course, Democrats, as you mentioned, are making the case that just what we know from Trump putting this request out there and, you know, withholding aid is enough to qualify for abuse of power. Whether or not it qualifies as bribery is another question, but at least Democrats argue it qualifies as abuse of power. So I think that's going to be really the central thing when it comes to the articles of impeachment.
Before we go to our callers at 800-642-1234, Republicans have people they want to hear from, as we were hearing toward the end there. Some Republicans want their congressional colleague, Democrat Adam Schiff, to come forward and testify. Some have said they want to hear the whistleblower, identity TBD, come and testify in front of them in one way or another. What about Republicans want to hear before this goes to some kind of potential impeachment vote?
Yeah, and I think a big part of their request is continuing what I think one of their big strategies is right now, which is to really criticize the process. So you heard that actually in the throughout the day today about how this is a very fast process, that it's only been, you know, I think 71, 72 days since the impeachment inquiry was begun. And so that this whole thing is being rushed. And so I think by saying, hey, we want to hear from Schiff, we want to hear from the whistleblower, we want to hear from others, they're trying to say, look, Democrats are just ramming this thing through without thinking about all of the different angles here. We want to hear the whole story. So I think it really fits into this narrative that Democrats have been unfair to Republicans and to President Trump on the process grounds.
Talking to Paul Nolet from Marquette University about today's day of testimony before the House Judiciary Committee in the ongoing impeachment inquiry. Now to your non-membership drive calls. Brian joins us first in Appleton. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Brian?
Well, you know, I've been on the road today for 5 hours and listened to the entire hearing, and I guess, you know, my point is maybe a normal guy is and not very political. It seems, again, everything's partisan. And Republicans are crystal clear that nothing happened, and Democrats are crystal clear that's impeachable. Yet at these hearings, there's three Democrat witnesses and one Republican witness. Why, A, I guess, how does that happen? And B, why don't they at least make it seem like they're trying to make it fair? I mean, it really, to me, felt like it was lopsided just because, you know, who was calling the hearing. So I'm interested to hear the answer to that.
Brian, thanks for the call. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, and on the first part, that's one of the advantages of having the majority, both on the committee and, you know, in the House in general, is that you get to set the terms of who's going to testify and you know, the individuals that will actually be able to have the chance to speak before the committee. So, you know, Democrats, not surprisingly, they wanted to have the advantage in picking more of them. Now, I think Brian's point is right, though, that their Democrats did get some criticism, including from other law professors who weren't there today, saying, hey, there's a lot of conservative law professors that they could have called to this hearing. And wouldn't it have been better to at least make it look more fair? And wouldn't have that actually been better for the Democrats themselves to have a hearing that seemed more balanced? So, you know, it's one of those questions about tactics that Democrats behind closed doors, I'm sure, talked quite a bit about. But you're hearing from all sides that perhaps they should have had more balance today.
Thanks a lot for that call, Brian. We'll go to Mary in Menominee now. Mary, hello.
Hello. I just have a comment about it seemed like it was kind of a slippery slope, the whole proceedings today. I listened to the whole thing. It seems like both sides have lost their integrity. It's just gone. and there has to be some communication between the two that they can resolve this issue in a positive manner. I don't know what it would be.
Mary, thank you so much for the call. I think probably a lot of people feeling like Mary is, Paul, wherever they fall on the issue of potential impeachment here, the idea that people are just taking their sides.
Yeah, and I think there is some weariness and frustration about the level of partisanship that we're, you know, in right now in American politics more generally, even outside of the impeachment context. I will say, though, that, you know, the idea that impeachments are partisan and that there are battle lines formed on a party basis isn't a new thing when it comes to impeachment, at least presidential impeachments. When we look at each of the other impeachment inquiries, so going back to Clinton and Nixon and Andrew Johnson, I mean, each one of those at least began with both sides really digging their ground and staying pretty partisan, at least, you know, until either throughout the entire thing or at least until pretty close to the end in Nixon's case. So, you know, these, I think impeachment in some ways just focuses partisanship even more so. And I think so it's almost doubling down on the partisanship that is very much entrenched in American politics today.
Thanks a lot for that call. Matt joins us next in Madison. Matt, hello.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Oh, sure can. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay. Yeah, I just noticed, I believe it's circular reasoning. The witness that the Republicans called forward is saying that the case that's being brought forward is flawed or is weak because it lacks facts. Well, one reason it lacks some facts is Donald Trump is not permitting the fact witnesses to testify. If Donald Trump was not obstructing justice, we would have the facts before us for everyone's benefit. And it seems like circular reasoning to me.
Thanks for the call, Matt. And yeah, Professor Jonathan Turley was saying, Democrats go through the court process, make the case that the president's people have to come and testify, take the time. Even if that takes a couple few months, that's okay.
Yeah, I'd mentioned that I think one of the tensions here in the Republicans' argument is exactly what the listener just brought up, which is, you know, if there's not enough facts, then, well, you need to gather all the facts, which means that you need people to testify. You need to dig up all this stuff. But it's going to take even more time if the executive branch is not going along with what Congress is asking for. But at the same time, Republicans are saying, well, we don't have enough facts, but they're also going too fast in this whole thing. You know, you need to slow it down. But I think from the Democrats' perspective, they'd respond and say, well, slowing down doesn't really get us anywhere because it's clear that the administration is just throwing all the roadblocks that they can in our way. And if we wait until the court system deals with every single one of these roadblocks, then we're going to be around for months, if not years. So I think from the Democrats' perspective, again, you know, there are some facts that are missing, perhaps, but there's enough there to move forward with impeachment. At least that's the Democratic argument.
We continue our conversation with Paul Nolette from Marquette University, looking at today's impeachment inquiry hearings before the House Judiciary Committee. Before we go back to your calls at 800-642-1234, Paul, a lot of the process points that have come up today, if this ends up going to the Senate, it's a whole new ballgame, right? And Republicans and the majority there can make sure that they get all the witnesses they want and are able to come forward.
Yeah, so the tables will be turned in terms of the partisan angle here, since, as you mentioned, Senate is controlled by Republicans, and they can run the process the way that they want. So, again, going back to the constitutional language, it's important to realize that, you know, the Constitution doesn't say much about the impeachment process itself. And so the House and the Senate have created their own rules to deal with impeachment that the majority can essentially change in the way that they want. The Senate is going to be able to handle the trial once they get any articles of impeachment in the way that they see fit. So a lot of those process arguments that Republicans on the House side have been complaining about, well, they'll be controlling the process in the Senate. And no doubt you'll hear some Democrats with some murmurings of complaints about the process on that side.
Let's go back to our callers now. Joey is with us in Westby. Joey, hi.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering if you thought today's trial maybe lost a little credibility when one of the scholars exhibited, you know, obvious bias and even went so far as to bring in Trump's son and family into the proceedings.
Joey, thanks for the call. I think talking about the Barron Trump comment, one of the law professors said you know, he can name the president can name his son Barron. I'm paraphrasing here, but he can't make his son a Barron, talking about the American Revolution rejecting hereditary aristocracy.
Right. And so Pamela Carlin, one of the Democratic, you know, invitees to this hearing, made that comment. And interestingly enough, and we've seen this happen before on the Intelligence Committee side, where some of the witnesses and the questioners are responding almost in real time to what's going on, you know, whether it's President Trump tweeting about the hearings, or in this case, you know, Pam Carlin getting criticism for that comment. And so she actually apologized for it closer to the conclusion of the hearing, which was interesting. But I think it was an example of the witnesses, you know, trying to have some sort of, you know, interesting or memorable sound bites that could come from the hearing. But that one, you know, there was quite a bit of criticism for it. I think enough that Pam Carlin said, well, maybe I should have an opportunity to apologize for that.
Right. Thanks a lot for that call. I will go now to Nate with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I noticed that several of the Republicans talked about how the Democrats had their minds made up already and that they had started the impeachment, basically, or as one person referred to it, the coup against Trump years ago. And that reminded me of Wisconsin about how Scott Walker tried claiming that the recall effort against him began before he was even governor. And the thing about that is PolitiFact looked into it back in December of 2011, and they made that claim false because the only reason the recall happened, or the main one, was because of Act 10. And the main reason we're having the impeachment inquiry now is because some of the things that Donald Trump was doing came to light. And I think they're basically trying to cover for Trump by lying about the reason that we're having this in the first place.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. And on that timeline, Paul, I mean, there was a stretch where there were a few Democrats here and there, and then a few dozen Democrats here and there pushing for impeachment and apparently, at least publicly, getting a lot of pushback from House leadership, mainly from Speaker Pelosi herself.
Yeah, and, you know, at that time when that was happening, there were a number of liberals and Democrats who were getting frustrated with Speaker Pelosi about that. But I do think that in the end, now that we know where we're at now, it in my view, it was a shrewd strategy because now, you know, I think that there's more of a pushback that Speaker Pelosi and other Democrats who had counseled caution in the early days, weeks, months of the administration about impeachment can now say, look, it's not like we were out to get him from day one. We carefully gathered the evidence. This is what Democrats will say. We carefully gathered the evidence, and now we're willing to go forward with the impeachment. But it's not like we were, you know, on day one of his presidency already drafting articles of impeachment. So I think that that initial caution from Speaker Pelosi is now coming back to be one of the points in Democrats' favor to say, you know, it's not that we're out to get Trump specifically, it's that the evidence is piled up for impeachment.
Nate, thanks for the call. Phil joins us now in Madison. Phil, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you think, Phil?
Question. Do you think Democrats are held to a higher standard as far as fairness goes? It seems if Democrats pull any plays from the Republican playbook, it's frowned upon, whereas Republicans, when they do their dirty tricks, it just seems that it's that's how you play the game, and they're kind of expected to do that.
Phil, thanks for the call. Paul, do you think the two parties are held to different standards, I guess, by each other or by the public?
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's one thing where it's in the eye of the beholder, I think, that, you know, Democrats have made that comment before, that the media and others, they don't, they kind of expect that, oh, Democrats are going to follow this procedure and have a balanced hearing, whereas if Republicans were in charge, they wouldn't be doing that. So again, I mean, I think that is something that Democrats argue quite a bit here. You know, again, though, it's hard to say ultimately when this sort of back and forth is so partisan, because the Republicans and Democrats in this conversation, whether you're talking about the substance, whether you're talking about the process, seem so far apart on these issues that they're almost looking at the situation in, you know, completely different lenses. So it's really an indication of just how polarized this entire process is, and really how American politics is today.
Talking about today's House Judiciary Committee hearings on the impeachment inquiry, Paul Nolet stays with us from Marquette University. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about today's House Judiciary Committee hearing in the impeachment inquiry. Paul Nolet stays with us, political scientist at Marquette University. You can join in still with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 on what you saw today, what you hope is coming up next, or your questions. Peter joins us next in Viroqua. Peter, thanks for hanging on the line through the news there.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm wondering if someone's words can be considered facts. So we had recordings played earlier, both Nixon and Trump, and Trump's was eerily similar to Nixon's. So from the president's own words, we can make some conclusions. And without getting into that, I just want to know if someone's own words, like the president's, can be used as facts, because it seems like there seems to be this controversy over whether there's enough facts or not.
Peter, thanks a lot for the call. And yeah, Republicans today, as Peter was saying, challenging the idea that there were facts backing up Democratic accusations here. What do you think of Peter's question about the role of the president's own public statements?
Yeah, and in fact, I think it plays an absolutely crucial role, because I think one could argue that even after all of these hearings by now the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee before that and a number of witnesses, that still the most important piece of evidence was the rough transcript, you know, that the president himself released of the conversation with President Zelensky about, you know, potentially doing the president a favor. And seemingly linking it with the aid to Ukraine, and I think those words are ultimately still the centerpiece of the case here against President Trump. And so, in terms of, you know, do the words matter? Absolutely. I think there's a big difference in terms of how both sides interpret those words and how serious they are. But absolutely, you know, the president's words are central to the entire discussion.
Thanks for that call, Peter, at 800-642-1234. Well, now that we've got some distance from it, I want to listen back to a couple of moments from today's testimony. First, I want to listen to Professor John Turley talking about the importance of a proven criminal act in the impeachment process. Here's a listen.
You can't accuse a president of bribery. And then when some of us note that the Supreme Court has rejected your type of boundless interpretation, say, well, it's just impeachment. We really don't have to prove the elements. That's a favorite mantra that is sort of close enough for jazz. Well, this isn't improvisational jazz.
And that's a really important question here, Paul. If we're saying, okay, the president was pressuring Ukraine for a thing of value, in this case, announcing investigations, does it need to meet, you know, federal statutes for bribery that would have to hold up before a court? Or is there some different standard we could be held to in an impeachment hearing?
Yeah, and it is a very interesting question. And this, not surprisingly, has divided the parties as well. But it is sort of an open question about whether bribery, which again is one of the crimes actually mentioned in the Constitution along with treason and then high crimes and misdemeanors, whether that actually maps onto the meaning of bribery as set forth by Congress or the states. And so the argument against that is to say, well, you know, a statute can be changed at any time. So Congress can change the definition, the elements of bribery, and states can do the same on the state level. But, you know, the Constitution had this word bribery in it, so it should be a meaning that, you know, has stayed constant throughout the years. At least that's one of the arguments here. And so I think from Democrats' perspective, they're saying, look, bribery is part of this. We don't need to strictly follow a congressional statute, since it's a different meaning of bribery when we're talking about that word in the Constitution, and especially when you link it to other articles of impeachment, which they would likely do, including abuse of power. I think the overall argument is, hey, you have to look at this holistically and look at the various ways that President Trump, you know, abused his power, went beyond what a president should do. So from the Democrats' perspective, certainly they say, look, you know, we don't need to follow that same statutory definition of bribery. We're moving forward with our view under the Constitution of what that means.
That was Jonathan Turley we heard from in that that quote there. He was the law scholar invited by Republicans. I want to give a listen now to Professor Pamela Carlin in her opening statement talking about the role of elections versus impeachment.
The framers of our Constitution realized that elections alone could not guarantee that the United States would remain a republic. One of the key reasons for including the impeachment power was a risk that unscrupulous officials might try to rig the election process.
And that's another moment that gets to the heart of one of the key discussions here. One criticism from Republicans is, hey, the president won an election under our electoral college system in 2016. Voters will have a chance to weigh in on what he did or didn't do in 2020. Why bother with impeachment in the interim?
Yeah, and this goes back, I think, to that big picture about, you know, criticizing the process here. And it also gets to one of the reasons why I think there is ultimately some speed on the part of Democrats, because if this does drag on too far into 2020, you know, particularly on the House side, you know, it goes into January, it goes into February, perhaps even before it gets to the Senate, then I think they're going to face that criticism more and more to say, look, we're going to have an election just in a few months. Why don't we just resolve it then? So I think Democrats, from their perspective, they wanted to get this done quicker to block that criticism to some extent. But I do think, you know, Pam Carlin herself, she brings up an important point, which is to say, you know, we do have elections, sure, but there also is this process of ensuring that the president is not above the law. So the impeachment process is in the Constitution, separate from elections and separate from, you know, the presidential terms, in order to ensure that there's some sort of process to check and balance the executive branch when they might be abusing their power or going beyond what a president should do. So I think that does get to a lot of the crux of the process debate that's going on right now.
And in that quote from Carlin, was the issue a lot of Democrats brought up? Okay, a president could do bad things, and maybe we could leave it up to the voters in that instance. But the accusations, the allegations here are that this particular president was doing things aimed at influencing those elections themselves. Does that change the discussion a little bit, that election interference is on the table, and that might raise the stakes for impeachment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another point in the favor of saying, hey, we should look at impeachment separately from elections. And that, you know, it's important to ensure the integrity of elections and to ensure that there isn't foreign interference. And so from the House side, you know, there has been this lengthy, even before the official impeachment inquiry, a lengthy process of gathering facts and trying to figure out what actually happened here and what Russia's involvement in all of this is. And, you know, perhaps the administration and those sorts of questions, I think, are important. So I would agree that there is a layer that's a little bit different than another type of impeachment inquiry, let's say, that didn't involve elections. I think that angle does, in some ways, raise the stakes and perhaps raise the difference between this impeachment process and, you know, the 2020 elections.
Paul, thanks for joining us and for being on call through this unpredictable hearing today.
Well, thanks for having me.
That's Paul Nolet, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. He joined us for a look at today's hearing in front of the House Judiciary Committee on the constitutional grounds for impeachment. This conversation will keep going on in the days and weeks to come. You can still share your thoughts for now. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.